I would like to comment on this question of indifference to values. Every pedagogue accepts as a foregone conclusion that it's wrong to tell a lie, to hurt or offend another human being, and to respond in kind to parental cruelty instead of showing understanding for the good intentions involved, etc. On the other hand, it's considered admirable and right for a child to tell the truth, to be grateful for the parents' intentions and overlook the cruelty of their actions, to accept the parents' ideas but still be able to express his or her own ideas independently, and above all, not to be difficult when it comes to what is expected of him or her. In order to teach the child these almost universal values, and my interjection, I would say values of class, of power, continuing, which are rooted in the Judeo-Christian tradition. Among others, adults believe they must sometimes resort to lying, deception, cruelty, mistreatment, and to subjecting the child to humiliation. And let me repeat that, because it's a little disjointed because of my interjection. In order to teach the child these values of class, of power, rooted in the Judeo-Christian tradition, among others, adults believe that sometimes you gotta lie, deceive, be cruel, and subject the child to humiliation. It's clear from the foregoing that a relativity of traditional moral values is an intrinsic part of this system. In the last analysis, our status and degree of power determine whether our actions are judged to be good or bad. This same principle prevails throughout the whole world of class. The strong person dictates the verdict, and the victor in a war will sooner or later be applauded, regardless of the crimes that have been committed on the road to victory. This was precisely Goring's point. We talked about this in a previous show. If we had been successful, we would be called the ultimate statesman. And remember how Popper put it. What people have in mind when they speak of the history of mankind is rather the history of the Egyptian, Babylonian, Persian, Macedonian, and Roman empires, and so on, down to our own day. In other words, they speak about the history of mankind, but what they mean and what they have learned about in school is the history of political power. This is elevated into the history of the world. But this, I hold, is an offense against every decent conception of mankind. It is hardly better than to treat the history of embezzlement or of robbery or of poisoning as the history of mankind. For the history of power politics is nothing but the history of international crime and mass murder, including, it's true, some of the attempt to suppress them. This history is taught in schools, and some of the greatest criminals are extolled as its heroes. What really happens within the realm of human lives is hardly ever touched upon by this cruel and at the same time childish affair. The life of the forgotten, of the unknown individual man, his sorrows and his joys, his suffering and death. This is the real content of human experience down through the ages. All the history which exists, our history of the great and the powerful, is at best a shallow comedy. It is the opera buffa played by the powers behind reality. It is what one of our worst instincts, the idolatrous worship of power, of success, has led us to believe to be real. And that's from Karl Popper's The Open Society and Its Enemies, Volume 2, The High Tide of Prophecy, Hegel, Marx, and the Aftermath. Well, Alice Miller, For Your Own Good, is explaining how that power worship instinct, quote unquote, came to be. And I see we are going to have to continue this next week. And I apologize for going long. Thank you, as always, for listening.